very much just join me and help me work towards a common goal, because at the same time, I want to expand on humanity's technology. I want to do some new and creative things that no one's really ever heard or seen before, and maybe that can lead somewhere.
My name is Paul Harvey, and this is Life, Passion, and Business. We're about helping you explore, finding your passion for life and the work that you do. But it's so much more than that. It's about finding clues to the big life questions. What does it mean to be successful? What is the meaning of life? If you're looking for more, then join me on this journey, where together we will discover through interviews, tools, and tips how to live life full of meaning, passion, and purpose. Hello and welcome to the program. As an old guy whose son is at college, I do not get to meet many people under 20. So when a young author approached me through a podcast matching site, I was intrigued. We had the usual pre-chat and it was a refreshing conversation. He had to come on the show. So this show is very different because, unlike most of my guests, Jonathan Nazario is at the beginning of his life, a 17-year-old author who has recently got accepted into the college of his choosing, a confident man who knows where he is going. Newton once said, "If I have seen further, it is by standing on the shoulders of giants." Well, very clearly, Jonathan has been standing on those shoulders. There is so much information available online these days, it is possible to get access to the kind of personal development that took my generation years to discover, let alone apply. His book is called Society, The World in Which We Live. It is a self-help philosophical mix that is his take on the world, highlighting the human behaviour, education, and the world of business. He is undoubtedly a deep thinker, and we both enjoyed each other's company. He reminds me of myself at his age in many levels, and we are at different ends of our lives. And so I have to say, if I came across as condescending, I do apologise, because it wasn't my intention, but I'm a bit of an old cynic. As a young man, Jonathan doesn't have the life experience to answer the questions that I would put to a guest, and yet he still has something to add to this conversation. In this program, we discuss his personal view of success, contribution, and the meaning of life. Jonathan has big plans for the future, and it's refreshing to hear the perspective from one so young. With his positive mindset, he will very likely fulfill his vision, and I hope I can catch up with him in 10 years' time to see how things are going. I hope you enjoy the conversation with Jonathan Nazario. Just a quick side note before I take you to Jonathan. We have a publication and website called Habitual Happiness, which I think is probably quite relevant at the moment. If you'd like to get free access to that, do check out the details at the end of the podcast. Hello and welcome to Life, Passion and Business. And I am delighted today, because I'm always delighted to have a guest, I'm delighted today to be with Jonathan Nazario. Now, he has the accolade of being probably the youngest guest on my podcast to date, because I believe this young man, he's not 18 yet, he's 17 and something. And when you're that age, 17 and something is important. So thank you for being on the program with me, Jonathan.
Thank you for having me on. But it is 17 and 4 months.
17 and 4, see, I think 17 and something is important when you're that age. When you're my age, yes. You get to 57, it just kind of like it's all 57 until the last possible moment. I'm 58. So Jonathan is unusual in that he is 17 years old and has written a book, and it is on Amazon. And the interesting part of that story is his parents didn't even know he'd written it, and he didn't even tell them he'd published it. So I think that's even more funny. So tell me, Jonathan, what's it all about? What's your passion? Why are you doing this with me today?
I really won't have something in my head, and I really want to get it out into the world so that other people can take it. They can build on it. They can use it the way they see fit to serve them. Because I feel like I have a unique point of view on the world and how I've written it. So I believe that a lot of people need to hear this, whether that be just adults or whether this be other teenagers. it has something to lift up everybody
Is
and to
that your
take them
book? Is
from
that
wherever
your
they
book you're
are.
talking about, or what you have in your head at the moment? Is this the book you've written, or what
It
you?
should be for the book I've written. The second book's a little bit more nuanced, but
Okay.
that'd be
So
for
tell us what the book's called, because I don't think I mentioned it.
the book is called Society, The World in Which We Live, and it is an interesting title. Sadly, it's been plagued by an internet meme at some point recently. So it will forever be known by we live in a society, but it's okay. Meanwhile, it's a lot of depth related to it. So very much it is slightly on the shorter end, but that's because I want you to think about what's in it rather than telling you everything that's in it, if you understand what I'm saying. So I might give a concept, but I won't go too in depth on it to
Well,
give your brain to expand on it.
let's come to the book in a bit. Let's
Perfect.
explore the journey you got there, because this podcast is all about the journey. So see, you're very young to have a position on this, but most people that I talk to have a journey before they get to writing a book.
I could see that.
Yeah, because there has to be some life experience in there to do that sort of thing. When we spoke on the introduction, you did blow me away a bit. I thought myself, well, this young lad clearly has something in here that needs discussing and exploring. So what have you always been passionate about?
That's a really difficult question. I would say if you ask my parents, I'm really passionate about video games. I would have to say that. But
Yes,
other than
I have a teenager who's the same and who's sleeping next door at the moment. But yes, I agree with you.
yeah, I just happen to be passionate about video games, but I wouldn't say I'm a little caught up in efficiency and my entire process of doing things and wanting to do them in the most efficient way imaginable, so then I don't waste as much time as other people need to then scale achievements based on compounding interest, essentially.
Wow. That's a pretty that's probably more forward thinking than some adults I know, but carry on.
It's just those things where those little seconds, if you do it repeatedly, it will eventually add up. So it's just that little optimization that you can make, and then that feeling of, ooh, if I can do this just a little bit better, we could just nail it. And then from there, then on, you can just use that as a format, if you will, and then just go from there.
Okay, so you're passionate about video games. Are you passionate about writing?
I think so.
Okay.
I'm way more passionate about writing than I am of reading because I don't like reading. Like, I do not like reading at all.
That's
But
interesting, because the best writers say you have to read a lot. But there we
that is true.
go.
But I would say I have a natural affinity for it. I do say I like it, and it's relieving once you get in that zone.
Yeah.
And I'm working on building my discipline back up as it's coming around the season.
I suspect you do read a lot. You don't recognize that you do. So my generation, reading is picking up a book and reading it. Your generation, reading is reading something off a screen, reading a phone, reading this, reading it. You probably read a huge amount more than you realize.
Problem. I do, yeah, but it's not for the same as as picking up a book. Because
No,
I'll
I
say when
agree.
I watch my YouTube videos at 2x speed with subtitles, I am definitely reading. But it's not like anything for school. It's not a fiction book. It's just general reading. So
That's just the transition to humanity, the way we change. I mean, it's like I recognize that as much as I, excuse me, I need to drink some water. I recognize I have a way of doing something that I've done for the last 40 odd years, and my 18-year-old does it differently, because that's the kind of world he lives in. He doesn't need to remember things. You don't need to remember things anymore. You just look them up. Was I had to, I
yes.
had to, you know, it's like if I had to remember, I remembered something, or I have to find it in a book and have to find where the book is, and so on and so on and so on. Whereas now they just Google.
That is true, but something interesting that I've noticed about information as of recently is that if you're looking for the best information, let's say you wanted to find out the information that the top 10 or to 1% have, it won't be on the internet. Everyone will be brainwashed on this one thing. Into whether they actually do it or not, or whether they follow it or not, oh well, but it's that one piece of information that you're going to keep getting no matter where you go on the internet to try and look for that organic, true source from people that have actually made it. And it just seems to still recycle the same old thing. And it really makes you wonder, is this just a giant conspiracy theory type deal where an industry will just be caught up in a method of saying something? Because even unsuccessful authors will be like, yeah, just go on social media, manage it, do it a day, 15 minutes. I'm like, okay, When was the last time you sold a book? And I think maybe last month, maybe 2 months. And then you start to think about it and you're like, if he's passing that on, that advice on is not getting reliable sales, you ask a top tier author, they'll still say the same thing. But that really makes you wonder if that is the method.
It's interesting. It's like the internet was born out of human structure, out of human ingenuity, and it was built in a way modeling how we work. In a human perspective, we have habits that we form. And they say that if you create a new habit, you need to practice it for 30 days, because then you create new connections in the brain. And the internet's the same. As connections get made by people searching, as the more people search for that thing, the stronger that connection comes, and the more the search engine shows that result to people. So in a way, the whole thing, as you say, it kind of is a self-feeding thing. One piece of information gets built on and built on and built on and built on and built on until it becomes the only piece of information on something. Interesting. I wonder how we do break the cycle. How do we create new habits in Google?
I mean, one thing that I do is efficient binary searching. So just adding quotes to the important words means that the source has to have that type of thing. I try to add the format of the document that I'm looking for as well. So then it just filters out all those garbage and useless results for things.
We're getting geeky. Need to be careful. Getting geeky. Pair of us. So look, okay. So you obviously are passionate about writing. You're passionate about information, about being efficient. So what drove you to write a book? How did you do this?
Well, I really didn't want to get a part-time job. And so I thought, hey, if I could work from home, this could be great. I won't need to wake up. I won't need to really go anywhere. It's just going to be me writing, and things be pretty simple. So let's sit down. Let's do it. And then I started writing one day, and then I gathered that information up after about 90 days of writing a page a day to 2 pages a day. And I started to go somewhere. And then from there, I filled in the blanks, smoothed it over. And then there we go. That's the book written.
Did you have an editor, or did you do it all yourself?
I did have an editor. It was a friend that just graduated from college.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, good. Editing, that's the killer bit of a book. Writing it is one thing, editing is another one.
Yeah, for my second book, I'm really debating who my editor is going to be for that.
Yeah, I think you've got to find the right editor for the work, really. That's true. So, okay, so how long did the book take you? It took you 90 days, the whole thing?
Okay, no, that's not true. So if we're talking in terms of time,
yeah,
it would be from probably August to April. If we're talking in terms of hours, like actual time of when I worked on it, I would say that it would basically be about 3 months.
That's
3 months of an hour a day.
That's pretty quick. Oh yeah, okay. That's not so much, an hour a day for 3 months, I guess. Yeah, yeah, that's good. That's pretty good though for writing a book in that time.
Yeah, I tried to be efficient, and smashing records is one of those things.
So where did it come from? What's the core message in the book, do you think?
The core message, I changed it a couple times throughout it based on the tone. But the one that I like to end on is the fact that a lot of things, whether you do or whether you don't do, the outcome is still balanced, if you will. So I haven't found a cheat code to life where you can simply go around its main principles. But no matter what, you're sacrificing something that you could have rather had by doing it. So let's say whether you have a decision to eat, whether you have a decision to wear a blue coat or a red coat, it's still the same as long as you make that choice. Like, sure, that's a little bit broad and that's a little naive to say for a lot of things, but in a bigger, broader sense, a lot of the things you do is all about, like, made up of time for the most part. And with that, sometimes you need to worry less about what you're doing with your time and just make a choice.
I'm not sure I understand that. You're going to have to make that a bit clearer somehow.
Okay, so people work for money, right?
Yeah.
So per unit of time, they get money, an hourly wage.
Yes.
And then with that, people could also spend that time on things like leisure. They get entertainment per that unit of time.
Yes.
But a main thing for entertainment is normally having money in most cases before YouTube and stuff.
Yes.
But now that YouTube's there, you can now choose between whether you want more money or whether you want to spend more time having leisure while still just having enough to pay your bills and stuff. So you can really micromanage what time you have If you want to really get up in the world quickly, you can go straight into the workforce and manage that, or you can really enjoy your time and go out partying and do all that other stuff. And either way, when you combine those life experiences and when you add those all together, they're going to be about the same thing, about the same quality, if you will.
If life is about experience, you're not going to experience it watching YouTube.
That is true. You aren't going to experience it watching
You're
YouTube, but
going
you'll
to
like.
experience someone else's experience of watching it by watching YouTube.
Yeah. So it's the weird paradox of that I have found, at least, of everything being equal in nature. And whether that be through technological progress, because we have things called, we have latent deficiency in our technology. So if we look at coal mining and stuff, that compared to a new source of energy, coal would technically be more efficient off the bat because we spent more time on it and we've then made it more efficient to pollution compared to earlier in the century. If we also found solar panel technology, they would be about equal. But then we look at the output now, and even though both have become more efficient, coal and solar panels would still be equal with their production value based on the costs of them over time and initially.
Well, yeah, but that's because, all right, we're going geeky again, which is fine. But I mean, that's because coal and carbon have an infrastructure that had to be paid for and has been paid for and is net zero, whereas solar panels have and the infrastructure around them still has to be paid for.
It still has to be paid for, yes. But the shift to solar panels, if you truly look into the technology, there's obviously the balance point at which it will break even with its carbon footprint. But if you truly map it all out, which is, I don't have the details pulled up right now because I did at some point, it actually comes out to the same thing. Either way, the point is that we make a choice on how we produce our energy and then we stick with it to make it as efficient as possible rather than trying to ping pong.
I get you. Okay, so is your so your book sounds as though it has quite a, I mean, who's the book for? Who would you say?
That's the issue that I've really been questioning myself ever since I've started writing. Who is it for? And as much as I want to say anyone who reads it, I really think it's truly for a person that's lost. I think it really is that whether
Lost
they're.
in what sense? Because being lost is quite a broad church. You can be lost in your own health, you can be lost in depression, you can be lost in all sorts of places.
Okay, I'm not sure about depression. It's a little dark.
Yeah, I
Like it, I'll
know.
give it that. It's a little bit dark, so it might just push you over the edge a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
It might be that hand that's just like, yeah, I don't think you want to live anymore.
No.
But if you're really lost in either what you want to do or a decision that you need to make, or you're just really concerned about life in general, it's just you take a look at it and you're like, life isn't as bad as I thought it would. But if we have an apocalypse and it lasts longer than 3 weeks, there's no way I'm getting food in a major city. Just one of those just subtle thoughts like that. And it's like, it's just how we go through and what we truly do, if you will. Like, it's thoughts on human behavior and optimization and how we can optimize on a micro and macro scale.
So
So,
it's about the book is about optimization of effort and results.
yes, for the most part, yes.
Okay, so that has quite a broad use, doesn't it, really? That sounds so this is so you would say it's about how to think, or what is it? Is it a thinking process, or is it a plan? What would you define it as?
I would say it's almost a heuristic because it's not quite a thinking plan. That would be putting it a little too set in stone. It would just be a practice of like an algorithmic filter almost.
Okay.
So it wouldn't necessarily be an entire thought process. Taking that and foolproofing that would take a
So,
lot more time.
does the what is it something that you've developed or something that you researched through the process?
I mean, statistically, it's something I researched, but technically it's something that I developed because I haven't seen it anywhere.
Well, that's pretty
But
amazing.
because of how the human mind works, someone else has definitely had the same thought as I did. I was just the one that wrote it down.
Okay.
So I would say that I developed it.
So you can take the principles, the methodologies that you've got in your book, and you could apply them to a problem.
Yes, you could definitely apply them.
So
You
if you've got
should.
a business, you could apply it to your business. If you've got
Yes.
a project, you could apply it to a project.
Yes, you can.
Well, this is very fascinating, and I still know the wiser. Can you help me? Can you help me by make get? Can how can you help me understand this?
Okay, that's a bit of a broad question. Let's go with an example scenario because lead learn by example and stuff.
Stories and are always good. Yeah, I'm old. I resonate with stories.
You resonate with stories. Okay.
Well, all children do too. But carry on.
Okay, so what are we going to choose with specifically with this example? You can take the direction on it.
Can I? I am. Yeah. What kind of problem am I looking for?
Just take a shot first, and then we'll see.
God, dear me, I didn't come prepared for this, did I? Wow. What should we do? Okay, so I'm building a new house.
Okay. You have a house that needs to be built at some point.
Yeah, I'm going to build a new house. How about that one? You're going to physically build a new home somewhere.
Okay. So no matter what, you're going to have your budget, and then you're going to have the amount of effort that you want to put in directly, assuming you don't want to hire someone, which is probably why you're doing it as a project.
Yeah. Okay.
So with that, if you take little shortcuts, let's say with the 2x4s and how you put them, the 2x4 bases that are going to be within your house, if you optimize where they're placed, you're going to then make your insulation job later on a lot easier.
Okay.
Because normally when people will build a house, let's say they do it within their own home, those interior walls don't need insulation.
Okay.
So doing that is a simple optimization tactic, even though we learned that throughout the years. But when you build a house, you also have budgeting concerns. And with that, you need to determine what's going to be used and what can really use a cheaper-ish material. So if you think about life like that, you will then start to put your effort in certain areas. So you're going to put your effort on those outside walls and the roof because you need those to stay up. We can all agree you need the walls and you need the roof to stay up. But those interior walls of your house, you can really worry less about them because anyways, you're going to be drilling holes in them, putting pictures up, doing whatever you need to there. So there's no reason for them to be as strong as the outside walls.
Yeah.
Your flooring and such, sure, you're going to spend some money on it, but it's not going to be some self-heating flooring for the most part. It's just because the floor is going to be there. If you're building a multi-story house, okay, then your floor might not be there. It might come down to the first floor at some point. But that's all being aware of your project and how to optimize and build towards it. Same thing with the door. You want a good lock on your door just enough to keep someone out of it, but just enough to keep them from going to your house and going to your neighbors compared to you, but not too strong to where it's like, was it really worth the effort? So you just want to be above them, like on that bell curve. And then you want to graph everything out based off the average. So maybe you spend a tiny bit less time on the floor, but it's the floor. It's used. It's going to take some damage at some point. You're going to drop something on it. It's going to be the same either way.
So are you applying mathematical principles to this? Is that what you've done?
I would say it's a mixture of taking, depending on the problem, it's a mixture of taking a standard deviation with statistics over it and finding out where you can dedicate slightly more or slightly less of your effort based on the average. To just regular mathematical principles. So yes,
it's fascinating. It's really interesting. That I mean, clearly, in terms of house building, architects probably do most of this already. House building is where you're systemized. Building is systemized. If you're doing it yourself, you kind of like work. You do. I have a friend who's building a house slowly, so it's quite interesting to see his process, which is kind of slow and methodical.
You don't really want to mess up, so.
No, indeed, absolutely. They're certainly measure twice and cut once, which is a good plan.
Yes.
Yeah. So, go on.
I think you really want to know the precursor to how I actually got the book written, like what information got cycled around.
Yeah, what inspired you to do this?
Yeah, so I wouldn't know if it's inspiration or just a calling naturally of intuition, but year and a half beforehand, I was watching those motivational videos on YouTube, and then I started to follow them because YouTube's been around for a hot minute, right? So you start to follow some of them in their careers, and you start to hear them speak, and then you start to wonder, is that your only talking point for 20 years in the motivational speaker business? Like, is that your only speech point? And then there's other ones that have multiple speech points, and then you can see how they actually continue their life and continue to take risks rather than just following one thing that happened, and let's just call that luck, essentially being at the right time at the right place. So it's taking in those types of hypocrisies, if you will, combining them together, and then looking at life as a thing to learn from. So you start to wonder why people do certain things, whether it's out of efficiency, out of desire, or it's already been placed there. And with that, you then start to realize and start to look at life in that way. And then you're like, okay, so if I see these professionals that have been doing this for 20 years, there's got to be a reason why they did this specific move instead of just something haphazardly, because they wouldn't do something haphazardly. It's their career, it's their day job. So why did they do it efficiently? Or why did they do it that way? And I try and sit there and you try and learn from it on why they do certain things.
It's interesting when you look at stagecraft as a role like that, because there are some performers who are at the top of the game for a very long time, and they had an act, but the act subtly changed. They kind of had an act where they would intermix stuff, so they would tell the same stories, but they wouldn't always be in the same place. And it's a bit like, I mean, Queen, for example, even though Fred is dead, will play Bohemian Rhapsody forever. They have to. They could not do a set without playing Bohemian Rhapsody. It just wouldn't happen. And the fans would feel cheated if they didn't.
Yeah, there is a point, but YouTube, you just edit it out. You know what I'm saying? Like you totally could have that part in,
Yes.
but if you're gonna keep watching stages and stuff like that, they're most likely be edited out on some versions, and you would definitely notice differences. Because I decided to map them out,
Yeah.
I started to take a look at it. So it's just finding those hypocrisies and nuances in life, and then
So
extrapolating them.
you know, what were you noticing with this? Some people just repeat the same thing all the time. Other people do different stuff.
Yeah, they gain new experiences and they still have new talking points because they still go out into the world and they still take risks and they still follow their own original motivational advice, and then they continue and build off of that to either follow up their success plan or meet whatever goals they have, and then they'll talk about that.
Okay.
So comparing those two, because I feel like if you're a motivational speaker, you should have the motivation to do something else. Maybe that's just me, but I just feel that that's a little lackluster if you're just going to have one motivational experience and call yourself a motivational speaker.
Well,
That's
it is
just me.
interesting. Motivational speakers motivate people. But yes, that's it. That's what they do. They motivate people.
Yeah, but since they're motivating people, they might as well motivate them themselves while they're out there doing it. That's
Yeah,
just.
but I think it's worked out all right for, I mean, oh gosh, the guy's name's gone straight out of my head, Tony Robbins, it's worked out all right for him.
Oh, okay, yeah.
He doesn't do anything else other than jump up and down and scream and shout at people. Do it, do it, do it. I've never been to a Tony Robbins event, but apparently they're very physical.
Ooh, okay, so I might need to go and go see one at some point.
Yeah, maybe. I think he just did the world's largest virtual motivational event. He had 25,000 people on a virtual event.
Good for him.
Yeah, and I think it topped out. I think he did, I think he probably pulled in around $7 or $8 million out of that one as well, because he had, I mean, the money on that event was amazing. But yeah, that's Tony for you. He does have a capacity to pull a crowd, and people will pay him money for it, even if it is virtual.
That's interesting. That's something to keep
Yeah.
in mind.
Okay, so you've got the book. The book is out in the world, and we'll come to the title and how people can get to it in that bit closer to the end of the podcast. So what do you, I mean, I need to stick to my questions because that's how this podcast works. It's like, so what do you think is success? What does success mean to you as someone who's just starting his adult life journey?
Well, I've written this in my book. Success is a title that is given to you from other people. You will never, if you deem yourself as successful, you're inherently unsuccessful, because that means that assumes that you've made it. You
Okay.
never really make it.
Okay, that's one definition of success. That's other
Yeah,
people's
that's one
definition. But
definition, I
what
think.
is your definition? So what does success mean to you?
Oh, okay. So right now, it'd be great if I could walk out into the world and be like a trillionaire and, like, I don't know, next 5 minutes, that'd be success right there. But if we're being more realistic on a broader term, being a best-selling author in the legitimate way, not the way authors do it these days, the legitimate way, it would also be great on top of that to
What
own
does
my own
it,
business.
let's clarify, what does the legitimate author mean to you?
Like, they're an overall bestseller, like hour over hour, day over day, not like I'm a bestseller for 1 hour now. I screenshot that, put that in my title, and I'm best-selling author. Because they had a real.
I think my definition of a best-selling author would be someone with a proper publisher, and publishers that seek them out. That's when what. But you see, the whole industry is on its head nowadays. Because nowadays you have to be an independent author, successful, then a publisher comes and invites you, then a publisher says, "We'll take your book on for you."
Yeah, that's
it works
why.
The other way around. It's kind of how it works now.
That is what it is, yeah. But I would say it's definitely that. And it's hopefully by 21, I'll be financially stable on my own. And then hopefully by 30, I'll have my own business. And then at some point, I would like to acquire myself $1 billion in physical money, not just net worth. And then just keep moving up from there, see what else I can do to help.
It's interesting. The money thing is because it would be big because of your age. What does having $1 billion mean to you?
It's that number that's like, it's that one number because it's hard to explain, but it's trillion is impossible.
Drop the number down. I mean, billion is billion. I mean, it's just like, you know, I mean, there's only 8,500 hours in a year. To get to 1 billion hours is a significant number of years. 1 billion is almost unthinkable, really. If you had $1 million, I mean, you only need $10 million and you're set for life. Your whole family's set for life. You don't have to do anything.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah? So what does it mean to have $1 million or even, you know, $5 million?
Probably pay off blue rental properties, and then from there, you just... Probably pay off, then just take off the rent because you pay them all the way off immediately, and then the rent.
But the thing about it, see, being a human being is, unless we have something to do, we start breaking things.
Yeah, yeah.
You see this a lot. People who are incredibly wealthy, or get incredibly wealthy, or win huge amounts of money, are often dead within 5 years because they don't have a clue what to do with themselves. There's nothing to push against.
I see what you mean. Okay, so that relates to the paradox, or that relates to the idea of a simple world, if you will.
Yeah.
Like when it's too easy, you don't have a challenge, and at that point, you just give up, more or less.
Yeah, I mean, then you just sit back and watch Netflix and get fat. Pass me another pack of potato chips, please. You know, it's like, if you've got nothing to do or no reason to do something, how do you stay motivated? That's the question, isn't it, really?
You either got to find your reason, or you just got to have some form of latent intuition that tells you to do something. There is, ultimately, if you have nothing that you want, there is no reason to do anything.
See, this is, This is the thing. I came up with this at the weekend. I did a podcast short at the weekend. I do a Sunday reflection every Sunday. And my reflection is this, that I think humanity's got to find new purpose.
But that's the dark thing about the world, though. There is no real reason. We're just left here. To our knowledge, we're just plopped here, basically. And what's the point of really expanding? Because eventually we're all going to die anyways.
Well, we're just animals. If you look at it from that perspective, we're just animals. And we're just here at consuming resources. Until we can't consume anymore, then we'll die. Just like a virus. The virus is the same. Or a bacterium is the same. It fills the bottle. It fills the space. Until then the space is full. And then it dies. That's what we're here for. That's the ultimate objective of us being animals in this world. If we can find a new purpose, if we can find a reason for humanity to do something which is bigger than just expand and make money.
I see what you mean on that sense, but I don't think that purpose is going to come very soon.
I think it's already there. I think the purpose is already there. We live in a finite world, and we have to kind of learn to live in this world in a finite way so that we can all have what we have and work within the resources that are available. Now, if we could all sign up to that, then we have a shared purpose.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that.
Humanity works really, really well when there's something big for everybody to sign up to. So the last time this happened was the World War. Either one side or the other. All of humanity was committed to either one side or the other. And they all worked towards that common goal.
That is true. We're amazing when we want to be.
Wasn't great. I mean, you know, the common goal was how to kill enough of each other so that you could ultimately predominantly win. Not good. But it was a very focused time.
It was very targeted, and it did lead to a lot of things because of that. So I don't know if you're asking about whether you want to start World War III
No, I
or
don't want to start World War III. Thank you very much. I think we need to try and find a way out of it that doesn't involve war.
okay. But I have a feeling that surrealism isn't really going to come for the next maybe 100 years.
I think you're probably right. I think you're probably right. So, okay, we've covered success for you. Success for you is obviously is at the moment you're in the process of acquisition. That's why success is where you are, really. That's your definition of it.
Yeah.
What about contribution? How do you think you're going to contribute to the world?
Well, first of all, as I progress and hopefully make it somewhere with my life, people can look back and they can read the books that I'll publish since I want to do one a year, and they could realize the thought process and the trends and analyze it, whether that be a psychologist, whether that be someone that wants to learn from me, and then they can just analyze my mindset and then see how they can basically inject that into other people if they want to. They can also help me out in my companies because I don't really have too selfish of desires, at least I don't think so. Like, so they could very much just join me and help me work towards a common goal because at the same time, I want to expand on humanity's technology. I want to do some new and creative things that no one's really ever heard or seen before, and maybe that can lead somewhere.
Well, look, you've published a book before you're 18. The chances of you doing that are considerably higher than what I'm doing. So, yes, I think you've got every possibility of achieving that in the
Yeah.
next 40, 50 years or 80, 100. I mean, you see, in
Oh yeah.
your generation, you've got 80 years left, probably. You could probably easily live to 100 in your generation.
That's crazy. I don't want to think about that.
You've got plenty of time. So, okay, what's the one thing I haven't asked you that I should have done?
Oh, I can't quiz you on your own podcast. It's too early for that.
What's the one thing I haven't asked you that I should have done? What's the one question you want to answer, you want to say? What's the one thing you want to?
Oh, okay. Okay, I got that now. What's the one question that I would like you to ask me? That's really tough because
No,
there's so
no.
much.
The reason it's there is this question is there so that you don't we don't go offline. You kind of go, oh, I wish I'd said this. It's an opportunity for you to say what you like, basically.
But so many things just flashed in my head right there, and then
Then
it's just like
pick the first
this.
one.
If the brain was that simple, I would be in business right now. But I would have to say I wish we talked a little bit more about the interworkings of all our debates and the higher in like the relationships between almost everything on a macro scale.
That's a nice conversation because the trouble that today with today's world is that most people are in the bubble of their own thinking, and so they're not used to having a debate with someone they disagree with.
Yeah.
So I will get into a debate with a Trumpist or with a climate change denialist. And they'll get insulting, and it's really funny because I can't. Like, I don't get insulted. I just carry on talking. I just talk through the insults, but they can't handle it because they just never had the chance to practice to properly debate.
That is, and then that leads into fallacious reasoning. Because I see that there's a lot of fallacious reasoning within arguments in general and within thought processes. Because it's like, if you don't support this, that means you support the other thing. No, that means I just don't support this.
No,
Thank you very
agreed.
much. Yeah.
Agreed.
So it's just
Yeah,
one of those, like.
absolutely. There are some things that climate change people that I don't agree with. I quite agree. I mean, I think climate change is something that we have to resolve. It all fits part of the overall picture of us using the resources of this world sensibly. That's where I fit with it. But there are some people who are way out there and going, well, we're not ready for that yet, maybe. I don't agree with that bit. So yeah, I can see what you mean.
So if we could just have open-ended conversations with that, with some of this stuff, like whether that be like a red pill or blue pill arguments, whether that be potentially within political parties or within whatever, if we could just talk a little bit more and it'd be a little bit more open about it, whether it be at a dinner table or whether it be in an actual debate, it feels like it would just make that a little bit more transparent to where it would be actual common talk, if you will, to acknowledge it, issues and stuff like that. And then people would be invested in it.
Yeah,
It wouldn't just
I
be an
guess.
issue on a sheet of paper. It would be something that we're passionate about.
Yes. Yes, I think this, in a way, what you're talking about here is a subject of a podcast in its own right. It literally is a whole conversation about the process of debating.
That would be really fun.
There's a lot. There's a long journey you could go on this one, and it would be quite interesting to bring some people in and have that conversation. But that's not what we're here for today.
It is not, sadly. But if no one could steal that idea, I might want to write that one down. You know what I'm saying?
Go for it. I think I'm happy to be. If you ever want to have that conversation with a group of people, I'm happy to be a part of it.
Oh, okay. That's something to keep in mind.
It is, isn't it? Maybe we ought to look at it afterwards. There we go. Let's have that conversation later. So, okay, we are coming to the end of our conversation. We've been talking for a while, so we probably need to wind up and come to some fruition. So the book, tell us more about the book and how people can get it.
The book is on Amazon. It is called Society, The World in Which We Live. I currently have my copy out right now.
A physical copy?
Yes, I have to have my physical copy.
Well done. Lovely.
It's so weird. It's too surreal still.
I imagine it does actually must feel surreal. Yes, absolutely. So that book is out and people can get it from Amazon. So we'll put the links on the podcast for that. Is there any other way of getting in touch with you? Do you want to get in touch with
yes,
people?
Yes, on my website, they can definitely reach out to me directly if they have anything they want to say, add, contact me on.
Okay.
Go wild there.
Are you on social media?
I am on social media. I have an Insta, Twitter, and a LinkedIn if you really Lovely. Feel that you need to add me on LinkedIn.
And is it under your name, Jonathan Nazario, or will they find you under another name?
It should be under my name. Yeah, it's under my name.
Lovely. Lucky you. I can't use my name because Paul Harvey's a bit more famous than I am.
That is. I can totally see that.
Yeah, it is a problem.
That must get in the way of a lot of things.
No, it's fine. I'm used to it. I get mistaken for him all the time. Well, maybe not. Because he's dead.
It's a little...
Oh dear. Anyway, so we are coming to the end of our conversation. So we have the final conversation, which we've actually sort of touched on a little bit. What do you think is the purpose of life? What do you think is the reason that we are here? For
the
you.
Reason that we're...
What is the meaning of life for you?
Oh wait, like for me on my micro scale or like as a macro scale as a whole? Because that's going to change my answer.
You could do both.
Okay, so on a macro scale, it really seems like we're in a simulation, most likely.
Yeah, I think that too, actually. I've come to that conclusion as well, but I won't go there. Carry on.
That's just what it feels like. But on a micro scale, for specifically me, what I would say my purpose is, I would say that I'm just here to provide, if you will. I'm just here to give out the list of things, because let's say we're wrong about that simulation. There is some sort of a guide. And then they put in the VCR of your life or the old cassette tape of your life, put it in, they look at it, and then they hand you the list of achievements. And they're like, see, that's what you were supposed to do. This is what you accomplished. Do you see how these don't line up? You could have been this, but you turned out to be that. So I don't want to be that type of person. I want to do everything on that paper and things that he never even imagined for me. The all-knowing God never imagined for me. So
it's funny, I've heard that story before somewhere, what you just said.
Yeah, it's interesting, but just want to make sure I don't mess it up, you know what
no,
I mean?
No, indeed. Don't mess it up. That's clear. That I think that's a good it's a good way to end this. Don't mess it up.
Seems pretty simple.
It does. It seems pretty simple. Well, Jonathan Nazario, thank you for your time and being with me today. It's been a fun conversation, and I didn't know it was going to go, and you know, I've had fun.
That's always good to hear. It's great. I enjoyed it as well.
Good.
Thank you for having me on.
Cheers. And that was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Jonathan Nazario. If you would like to catch up with Jonathan, you can find him on Instagram, Facebook and at his website, jonathannazario.webnode.com. His book is also available on amazon.com, so do check it out. The links for those will be above and on Life, Passion and Business as usual. So how are you doing this January? For many people, it is the most challenging month of the year, particularly because of the hiatus of Christmas and the hard landing into one of the coldest months. Plus, this year's global situation is making it challenging all round. However, as guests on the podcast and in virtual events have said, and every coach will tell you the same, it's what goes on inside your head that matters. The mind is constantly building new connections, and we choose which path to make stronger. Our happiness is one of them. The outside events can influence our happiness. The highs and the lows are ephemeral. Sustainable happiness comes from within. Now, I have a publication on our website called Habitual Happiness, and explains and demonstrates that happiness is not a destination, but a way of life. The value of that book is $12.99 on the website, but I would love to give you a free copy. So here's what you have to do to get your copy. Using your phone and the podcast app or the app of your choice, please rate and review this show and send me a screenshot of it. That is it. Just send me a screenshot of that rating and review. Email it to paul@lifepassionandbusiness.com and I will send you a free copy of Habitual Happiness with my blessings. Okay, so that's it for this week. So thank you so much for your time and attention. I'll catch you later. All the best.